No, we are going to. Would we do it in German or in English? How should we proceed? Switch? English. Okay. So there is still some instantaneous translation for everybody. The day started with three presentations on critical. This is the opportunity to open the floor, of course, but I just wanted to make an initial question and then we go on. The day started with a reflection on three critical practices from the past, Großstadtpädagogik, the experiences in Great Britain, and finally the experience of the citizen school project. And while I was following the presentation, I thought if there is a link between this situation of emergency of and the possibility to develop a politics of hope. So I would like to come back to this politics of hope, because I think the way we interpret it and the way we re-articulate it depends very much on the assumption which is the departure point. And I would like to ask Carmen, which is the departure point in German society she's describing when mentioning what can get wrong in these collaborations. And I would also like Arjun to describe the point of departure of these approaches. Yeah, please.
Well, I hello? Is this working?
No, no, it's just a matter of time.
It's a matter of time.
Okay, take magic. Or magic.
I hope that I understood your question right, because I really had like acoustic problems in the beginning. But I will just start to talk and then you can interrupt me if you think that I didn't grasp the question. Yeah. So that was something which I was really concerned about when I wrote the comment, you know, that I think this concept is so locally specific and has to be translated in each context. Very, you know, with all its particularities. And when I was thinking about it in our context here, it worried me that in all the reflections which we have been doing here in the conference, and I think also in the collaborations which you have in the framework of Schools of Tomorrow, we are actually not tackling the spheres of this of the educational sector in the city or in the country, which could be compared to something like a concept of subalternity. Yeah, it's just not included. It's something like the suppressed dimension. When we, you know, when we talk about schools of tomorrow, we don't think about these places where you have accumulation of everything that goes wrong, you know, which I mean, there are situations just like from what I know from, you know, being 23 years in the systems, which I can only compare to jails, you know, not so much because I think people are incarcerated, but in terms of the dynamics, which evolve in those places. And I think this is exactly where such a concept needs to be located. And, you know, we have to start from there when we talk about the politics of hope. Mm-hmm. Is that an answer to your question or not?
It is.
So much? Thank you. I'm glad it is.
Arjun?
Maybe I'll use this. Well, thank you, Sylvia. I'm also thinking that your question could be engaged at different levels of geography or of scale, but let me just dive in and say one thing, first of all, which is that I completely agree with Carmen that the status quo, the current state of affairs, is a huge excessive dominance of a small group. Let's call them white, let's call them male, let's call them older. Although some of us are not white and some of us are male and some of us are older, but still, that group is excessively present in defining what is knowledge, who should get it, what is taste, what is judgment, and so on. So diversifying that, I think, is an aim that we all share. The question becomes the how of that. And so my answer to the question of the departure point or staging point for that, whether we're talking about Berlin, whether we're talking about Germany, whether we're talking about Europe, or whether we're talking in a more broad global scale, is that particularly taking the politics of hope seriously, which was in my mind throughout my talk but not articulated clearly. Again, I would say I fully support Carmen's idea, and I've said this in writing also, that the challenge about aspiration is that it's diverse. Some people want more wealth, some people want more health, some people want more friendship, some, you know, it's culture, and not just some people, but some whole societies are organized around different ideas of a good life. That's both a research problem and a practical problem. You can't assume that everybody wants what I want, so let me help them get to be like me. That is an older model. So we have some challenges there, but I think leaving that aside, the question of how, for example, you bring groups that are suppressed, marginalized, silent, subordinated into this bigger conversation from the point of view, let's say, of research, but you could also ask it about other things, involves a readiness on the part of us, largely educated, relatively privileged people, to eventually disappear. But to disappear, we have to first appear. And the only catch with disappearance. And appear not in our normal guise, but as people who are involved in transferring our methods without requiring the same life we lived, which is, let's say, to go to university for 5 years, go to postgraduate school for another 5 years, do research for another 5 years, write 3 or 4 articles of dubious worth, then do the habilitation when we are nearing retirement, etc. This is, to impose this requirement means immediately exclude 90% of the world. So we have to find more direct methods. And if, and to the extent to which those direct methods succeed, and it doesn't matter whether it's Berlin or Mumbai, I think these are really universal things, we ourselves will become more and more dispensable. And we have to be ready for that. When the moment comes when the person who has learned something about interviews, ethnography, photography, narrative, storytelling, and says, you know, I don't know what you're doing here. I'm fine, you know. I've really figured it out, how to generate effective knowledge, whether of the future or the present, to make it credible, to make it rigorous, and to make it part of an argument, then we have to be ready to retreat. So we have to appear to help, because the training and all won't happen by magic. You can't say, I want you all to become researchers, and psh, it happens. It has to be done in a particular spirit, and then we have to be ready to step back so that research also can be seen as a very diverse kind of activity. Not just the people are diverse, but the practice can also be diverse.
So thanks for that. I think we've been running in the UK a program. We have over 300 projects. We've spent a huge amount of money on it called Connected Communities to try to build collaborations between universities and community partners to build grassroots research. One thing is very clear, you actually need money. So, you know, let's not mess around. Who's in this room? How did we get here? What transport did we use to be able to be here? What childcare facilities do we have to allow us to be in this room, and so forth. So it's fundamentally you need to address the financial issues that enable people to have the space to think about doing research. However, I would say we've learned a lot about how you do that, and there's lots of evidence out there. But I suppose my question is, when we're thinking about the future, is research enough anymore? So what I would say is we're living in a crisis of research. We have, in the UK, we have government ministers saying we don't want to listen to experts anymore. We've had enough of that. We're living in a climate where evidence is seen as just one truth amongst many. And particularly when we're looking at the field of the future, we have a new breed of consultants, commercial companies, who are selling particular ideas about the future. So we need not only to build the capacity for research, which I completely agree with, but we also need to build the capacity to critically interrogate and challenge the ideas of the future that we are being presented with. And the problem with research is it tells us what's already happened. It tells us what we know. I know it is an inquiry into the not yet known, but once it becomes known, it is known. So you then are not in the field of you have to come at it from a different direction. So we need to build and democratize in all the critical ways that we're talking about the capacity not just to aspire, not just to conduct research, but to produce rigorous ways of thinking about the future, contesting the assumptions that are being made about it, contesting the visions that are being put forward, and being able to generate alternative visions. Without that, frankly, we're not actually going to address any of these issues.
Gerd, would you like to comment on this topic?
I can. Maybe a few observations. In terms of where we are in relation to who we are not, I think what I hear is an idea of empowerment. We have something that other people have not, and our duty is to give that to them. The problem I have with empowerment as an educational strategy is that the power that is available is power within a particular field. And if you do empowerment, in a sense, you accept the parameters of the field. That's why I find it valuable just to have two words to make a distinction between empowerment and emancipation. And for me, emancipation always also raises questions about what is actually the field that gives some think power and gives someone power. And for me, that's a different educational dynamic even. And that's why I'm concerned about research. So I would actually say the real issue is about the right to know. And for me, the global research industry is challenging that right by saying, well, only if you have research. It's destroying education by saying, only if you have evidence from large-scale randomized controlled trials, then you are allowed to speak. And that's it. I think it's undermining the teaching profession. It's undermining, I would say, the connection between education and democracy. So I would like to push the discussion just a little bit further into both the question of the right to know, but also that cannot be a question of just empowering, but that right comes with a particular construction of the field in which it has power, and it's partly also pushing that field in a different direction. And there we have a job to do, but I think it's a different job. Also, educationally, it's a different project.
Geht das? Ja, es geht. When I listened to your talk, and I also read the chapter of the book of 2013, I was thinking about all the efforts which have been made since the 1960s under the umbrella term of participatory research, action research. So there is quite a long history of this kind of engagement. And as we, at least here on this side of the table, might all know, it has been going in very different directions. So my concern when I think about the right to know or the right to research, is rather that still we have to have debates on the horizon, you know, because you can do participatory action research for the most repressive and most reactionary means. Yeah, you can teach people to research, you know, I don't have to repeat that, I guess. So, you know, there are some challenges connected to the right to know, the right to research, which are of an ideological nature, I would say, you know, yeah, very like foundational question.